And that takes us to Ireland and to Glasnevin Cemetery, to the Glasnevin Trust, as we welcome the CEO, George McCullough. George, very welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Adrian. Good morning to America. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
It's afternoon here in Dublin.
Don't we know? And we hope that you're getting some of the weather that we have been experiencing here this week. I don't know when.
It's very grey and overcast warm.
Yeah, well, at least you're able to see where you're going. We've had fog here that I tell you, blind you. Anyway, tell me a bit about the Glasnevin Trust. And, you know, you might want to go back to 1828 and that O'Connell fella, Daniel. Can you take us back?
I can, yeah. Well, 1827, there was an incident in Dublin whereby the funeral of Mr. Darcy was disturbed by the bishop, the Protestant Archbishop of Dublin, forbidding the Catholic burial rite. Needless to say, the under the penal laws that were enforced at that time, Catholicism was forbidden, Catholic burial rites therefore was forbidden, Catholics couldn't own cemeteries. Indeed, the cemeteries of Ireland were held by the established faith, that was the Church of Ireland. The Catholic population of Ireland weren't allowed to bury their dead in peace, they weren't allowed to perform the Catholic burial rite. O'Connell identified that there was no structure or legislation passed under the penal laws to prevent Catholics owning cemeteries. The Dublin Catholic Committee was campaigning for Catholic emancipation at that time, quite vigorously, I may say, and they saw the opportunity to establish Catholic cemeteries as the fulcrum to overturn the oppressive penal laws. In 1827, they purchased about 2 acres of land for the astronomical sum of £600. I think that in today's money it would be 60 million or something like that. Like, I couldn't equate it.
Yeah.
But the cemetery was very, very successful with the Catholic population of Ireland.
Yeah.
It led to the establishment of Glasnevin Cemetery in 1832. And we've been in the cemetery business since. But O'Connell did identify that by having a strictly Catholic cemetery, that he would be practicing the same discrimination that he was objecting to, and our cemeteries became all religions and none. We've been in business since 1832 here at Glasnevin. It's 124-acre site, more or less in the heart of Dublin now. It was out in the suburbs when it was first built, but it's in the heart of Dublin. It's Ireland's necropolis, or Ireland's cemetery, something akin to Arlington, except Arlington is a strictly military cemetery. The cemetery here at Glasnevin contains 1.5 million burials over 124 acres. That covers all of Irish history for the past 10 generations or more, and everything that is Irish history. The greatest leaders of Ireland are buried here. O'Connell himself under the great tower, Michael Collins, Devon Aaron, Jeremiah Donovan Rosser, the Fenians, the Young Irelanders, the Irish political and military political leaders, all of the Irish men, Manion, Dirk Curry, and James Joyce, Kearns. In fact, 132 characters that are in Joyce's famous novel are all buried here.
George, let me ask you, first of all, it is an active cemetery.
Yes, we still have. We operate 5 cemeteries in Dublin. Golden Bridge was the first one that I just described to you, Glasnevin, from 1832, and we remained very much that way until about 1970. Modern lawn cemetery.
Now, to get the government, the Irish government, to support a centenary memorial to all of those who lost their lives in the 1916 rising, I suppose there would be no more appropriate place than Glasnevin and Glasnevin cemeteries.
Yeah, that's quite correct. Buried here at Glasnevin are all of the leaders of the Easter Rising and all the participants of the Easter Rising, from the Irish Republican Brotherhood, for from the IRA of that time. Where just mentioned Collins, De Valera is buried here. They're buried within walking distance of each other. In fact, within sight of each other. Jeremiah O'Donovan Ross of the Great Fenian, who had the gunpowder plots and dynamite plots in the late 1800s, early 1900s, is buried here. But many of the citizens of the rising, 488 people died in Easter week, 1916.
How many did you say there, George?
488 people died in Dublin in Easter week, 1916. And that would be the Irish Volunteers, the Irish Citizen Army, coming in the land.
Right.
The military, the British military, the police forces. But there are 244 of them buried here.
Mm-hmm.
66 are buried in unmarked graves. After the rising, all the dead were collected up from around the city and gathered up in the castle yard of Dublin Castle, all of whom were identified.
Yes.
Coming into May of 1916, 3 years after the rising, there were many bodies unclaimed. Families hadn't got the resources to bury them. Part of our charitable status for charity and a not-for-profit organization is we bury the poor of Dublin, whether they have the resources or not. There are 64 remains buried in common ground at Glasnevin. We plan to build church above those in 1916, chapel and chapel of reconciliation here at Glasnevin, sponsored by the Irish government, or supported, I should say, by the Irish government. To the tune of €2 million, we are in the process of raising another €3 million to help build that chapel. The chapel again is it's a chapel. It's a civic space. It would be used for burial purposes, burial services. It would also be used as a lecture hall, concerts, cultural centre, and to remember those all of the people that died in the rising. But particularly those that are already been on large waves.
George, let me ask you about what exists right now and what is managed by the Glasnevin Trust.
What exists here at the cemetery? So, as you said, 124 acres of cemetery.
Yeah.
It contains 1.5 million burials.
Okay, but I understand, but in terms of museum or community...
The cemetery here was largely neglected for quite a long time, probably from the 1930s up until quite recently. We identified that the cemetery was in a very, very, very bad condition.
Yeah.
The Irish government, again, supported us with the restoration and conservation of many of the really, really fantastic monuments that existed in the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
I would describe large parts of the cemetery as a forest of Celtic crosses. Many of those families had died out. The crosses were falling. They were sinking into the ground. The place was a danger to walk through. We have embarked on a complete restoration of all of the, from 1830 to more or less the present day, all of the really fantastic monuments to literally the people who built modern Ireland. And that would be the greats, as we just mentioned, like O'Connell or Parnell, but also the poor of Ireland. We have a large areas of famine ground, probably the biggest famine burial area in Ireland. The poor of Dublin, poverty was a terrible thing here. At one time, many, many people couldn't afford to bury themselves. But intermingled with the poor are all of the greats of Ireland. We have conserved all of the site. We have built, I think we've built up. Rebuilt about 12,000 of the very significant monuments that are within the cemetery. 5 years ago, we opened Glasnevin Museum, and that tells the story of Irish history going back probably to about the 1700s. The museum had 100,000 visitors last year, many of those being the school, primary school children of Ireland, 35,000. Primary school children
have come into
the cemetery to learn their Irish history. And when kids come into the cemetery here, you say, well, why would we go to a cemetery? But they say, you see the grave of, I say, Parnell or O'Connell, and they realise, oh, these people existed. This, we don't just have to learn a sort of a book. My granny was buried 2 years ago. History becomes tangible, history becomes real to children. We have formed an association with Trinity College, whereby we are educating the educators, and that's the primary school children, to teach history, to teach local history, to teach history as children understand it.
Is there a genealogy facility at...
We have indeed, yeah. We have two resident genealogists working here on site. We have 1.5 million burials. We know where every single one of those burials are. We know who they are. We know where they live. We know what they worked at. We know what they died from. Each grave containing maybe from two, sometimes 10, 20 burials, there are what their relationships were to each other. So we have a very active genealogical database here at Glasnevin, which can be accessed at www.glasnevintrust.ie. I give you an example. We're looking at our history, our names there. Byrne would be the most common name in a cemetery. There's 25,000 Byrnes. I think there's 5,000 Patrick Byrnes and 4,500 Mary Byrnes. So that'll give you an idea of the genealogical information that we have.
Yeah, we have another couple to add to your list there, but let's just be scale, Ella. Let me ask you, though, about, again, let's concentrate on the chapel, because whereas you have done tremendous work, and for those who maybe one and only trip many years ago to Glasnevin, where you walked in, and it was a maze. There was, again, it was poorly maintained for the decades from the 30s onwards. But you know, the chapel is in the process of being built, or is this something that you are planning?
The new chapel, the 1916 Citizens Chapel, we're at planning stage at the moment. We're probably go through planning in the next month, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And would be planning to construct.
Right. For curiosity,
we're planning put brick on brick probably towards the end of this year.
Okay. Now, that's pretty ambitious. Now, geographically, where would that be placed?
The chapel, the new chapel, the 1916 Citizens Chapel, will be in a section of the cemetery called St. Paul's. The cemetery is divided by the N2 of the Finglas Road. You're approaching the cemetery from the city side. On your right hand, left hand side, as you approach the cemetery, we have a beautiful parkland area, and then behind that parkland is St. Paul's. It would be placed, as I said, over the graves of the citizens of Dublin who perished in the 1916 Rising. The chapel would be adjacent to the existing 1916 monument to the volunteers, 17 volunteers who were buried in that area, which was erected for the 50th anniversary of the Easter Rising in 1966.
I am particularly interested in the section where the famine victims were interred. Is that a particular section? Was there some reinterment?
There was indeed. The original famine plot, 1835 to 1852, thereabouts, it is just an open grass here at the moment. It was buried in, I think it was about 30,000 burials, not all famine victims, I may add, in that area. That area lay vacant after those burials for about 100 years. And then was used for the same burial ground was used again for premature and stillborn children from 1940 to 1970. That area now has all been totally landscaped and planted. It's in the northeastern corner of the cemetery, probably the oldest part of the cemetery. And immediately adjacent to that, in fact, there's a large burial ground for smallpox.
Wow.
So we can tell that this cemetery contains an awful lot of things. And then there's a second famine burial ground where the great leader of Ireland, Charles Stuart Parnell, is also interred.
Mm-hmm.
it was the wish of Parnell to be buried with the poor of Ireland, and that is exactly where he was buried. In that burial ground, and that is also the famine area, there is about 60,000 burials.
Now, Glasnevin Cemetery is actually, well, obviously it's the most prominent, and it has recognition worldwide, particularly with respect to, you know, the and the connection with 1916. But you, at the Glasnevin Trust, you have a number of cemeteries under your wing. Is that right?
We do indeed, yeah. We have, as I say, Golden Bridge Cemetery, Glasnevin Cemetery, Palmerstown Cemetery in West Dublin, Newlands Cross Cemetery in West Dublin, and Dardistown Cemetery in Northern Dublin. And we have three crematoria as well.
Okay. And, okay, we're getting a couple of emails as I speak here to you, encouraging me to ask you about, are there funeral services, burials, cremations that take place from other countries, other areas? If there, I would assume that by the tone of these emails, that somebody might be thinking, boy, that would be a hell of a place to be buried.
Yeah, we do. We do take funerals from anywhere. If a citizen of France or Germany or America want to be raised in Glasnevin, we will provide those facilities.
Mm.
We will have burials based at Glasnevin, and indeed in all of our other outlying cemeteries. And indeed, our oldest cemetery, Golden Bridge, was closed by order, believe it or not, of the War Office in 1860, because it was adjacent to the Richmond Barracks in Dublin, which was the muster point for all of the Irish regiments who were then part of the British Army.
Yeah.
To go off to various wars. The commanding officer of Richmond Barracks complained that the putrefying remains of the Catholic dead were polluting his wells, and
yeah,
his soldiers would die of cholera or dysentery long before they got to the battlefields. So Golden Bridge Cemetery was closed in 1860 by order of the War Office. We plan this year to reopen that cemetery,
yeah,
on the 170th anniversary of the death of Daniel O'Connell. O'Connell was a very, very astute individual. When he opened Golden Bridge Cemetery, he sold 200 tickets for 2 shillings and 6 pence each to get some of his money back from the 600 that he had spent.
It's an amazing story.
Yeah.
You know, historically.
So, on the 14th of May this year, we plan to reopen Golden Bridge Cemetery by replicating that concert.
Wow. I have to say, in looking at your website, the crematorium building itself
yes,
looks like it could have been built for the arrival of the Pope. It is a very ornate and very impressive building.
We've opened 2 crematoria in the last 10 years.
Mm.
One is the Newlands Cross, and the most recent one, you know, right near Dublin Airport, is our grand cemetery. Again, it's a multifunctional building. It's used for cremation services. It's used for civic.
Right.
It was used for civic purposes, for concerts, for lectures. The building is not used in the evening time, as you can understand.
Yes.
And
it's again, it is the crematory, but it is it's a community center as well.
Okay. Community facility.
Facility, yeah.
Facility, yeah. And then we take care of Glasnevin. We're just going into our last of our winter lecture series. That was this winter lecture series is by Trinity College. It is based on public history and local history.
Yeah.
Last Thursday night, did a lecture on the Hales brothers from West Cork who ran the flying columns during the War of Independence from 1919 to 1921. Subsequently, the brothers split with the parting of the ways, the pro and anti treaty sides of the Irish Civil War. Fantastic lecture. I learned something myself that really stood me back on Thursday night, that one of the Hales brothers, who was involved in the ambush of Michael Collins, who's buried here at Glasnevin Cemetery, wrote a full account of the ambush of Collins. Mm. I'd never heard that before, and no one else had heard that before. So we're looking forward to that coming out in the next couple of years. Probably it will come out, hopefully it will come out, or be published for the anniversary of Collins' death.
Yes, I know that you and many of the executive members of the Glasnevin Trust are coming to New York and various other places throughout the United States in the coming weeks. And
we are. We'll be in New York next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, meeting with the Irish Historical Society.
Mm-hmm.
Irish American Historical Society.
Yeah, the American Irish Historical. Yeah. And you have a lot on your plate by, in basically spreading the word, because again, old images are hard to revise unless you actually do a marketing plan, and definitely other than Dubs, those who lived in Dublin, and many of them would say that Glasnevin, those who are here, from the 50s and 60s of, would say, Glasnevin, if you go inside the gate and go up, you'll find, as much as there is worth seeing there. That's has been immensely, and we have to congratulate the trust on that. That has been...
Well, Glasnevin has really changed over the last 10 or 15 years since the start of the restoration program and opened the museum.
Mm.
Glasnevin would have been seen probably traditionally as a Catholic cemetery and a Republican Valhalla, while the vast majority of people buried in the cemetery are Catholics, because the vast majority of Irish people are Catholic. There's an awful lot of Republicans buried here, but there are an awful lot of British history and British colonial history buried here. We just erected a cross of sacrifice last year, two years ago, to the 50,000 Irishmen who perished in the First and Second World Wars. As part of the decade of centenaries last year, we erected a necrology wall, and the necrology is what it says, that it is a list of all of those, and that is all of those who died in the Easter Rising of 1916. So there have been Irish Volunteer, Irish Citizen Army, British Army, RIC, DMP, and the Ordinary Citizens of Dublin.
Right.
We plan to do that right throughout the decade of centenaries, to the end of the Irish Civil War. Glasnevin has become a centre for reconciliation. Many of the paramilitary groups, both Republican and Loyalist groups, visit the cemetery. They visit here together. We're a cemetery for all of the people of Ireland, for all of Irish history, and we have become a centre for peace and a centre for reconciliation.
A great addition when you think that the situation in Northern Ireland, the Good Friday Agreement, the struggle, the continuing struggle for peace in the North is not lost by virtue of, again, the most prominent cemetery and now a nationally recognized facility there to for peace and reflection and reconciliation. That's probably one of the most prominent aspects of your new project.
It is indeed. We've had some very prominent visitors here to the cemetery over the years. One of the earliest ones brought by our previous Taoiseach, Bertie Ahern, was the Reverend Ian Paisley.
Yes.
Just before he became First Minister in Northern Ireland. And he came and he walked through the cemetery. He stopped at the grave of Sir Roger Casement. after that replacement, having been a Lord of the Realm and executed for treason. And they said, Reverend Paisley, there's a constituent of yours from North Antrim, and he looked at the grave of Sir Roger Casement, and he said, well, he did what he believed was right. And he stood and he said a prayer beside the grave of Roger Casement. A moment that would stay with me until the day I die.
Yeah.
We've had the Ulster Volunteer Force here on several occasions. They held an exhibition in our museum. In fact, it was the first exhibition that we had in our museum, and that was Loyalist Ulster going to Dublin to show what their history and what their heritage and what they believed in, and very, very, very well attended.
The exhibition. Yes. Now, finally, I want to ask you, about, because of the immense grounds and area to cover, is this wheelchair friendly? Is it handicapped accessible?
100% wheelchair friendly, yeah. Part of the restoration was all of the intricate pathways that run through the cemetery here. And they've all been restored, and the museum is fully wheelchair accessible. I think today we have 9 separate tours here. There was a few from Northern Ireland. Most of them were usually at the weekends. It would be the historical societies and the senior retired groups with Saturdays and Sundays. We would have school kids throughout the week. Yeah, this is very, very accessible. We're immediately adjoining us is the National Botanic Gardens here in Dublin, and we've joined our site of the cemetery and the site of the National Botanic Gardens into one vast pedestrian area. The cemetery here was designed as a garden cemetery, in other words, a garden in which people are buried. There's the most fabulous trees planted right throughout the cemetery, and then you have the really beautiful gardens of the National Botanic Gardens next door.
Glasnevin Trust, you really have done an amazing and a fantastic job and continue to do so, and we look forward to meeting with you in this coming week.
Hopefully I will meet up with you in the coming week indeed. We're in New York from Wednesday, or Wednesday until Sunday next.
Fantastic. Now, your website gives...
It's www.glasnevintrust.ie. And if any of your listeners want to go in there, just type in the surname once you get into the genealogical section, and it will tell you how many Burns, how many Murphys, how many McCullochs, how many Kennedys, how many Flannerys, indeed, are buried at Glasnevin.
Yeah, well, I hope there aren't too many there. Having said that, look... one should recognize, though, that this was not and has not been all inner city or Dublin, that actually a lot of burials and a lot of those who were buried in Glasnevin, many of them were transplants from, many parts all over Ireland, for that matter.
That's right. It's not just the Dublin Cemetery.
Yeah. Okay.
We're very interesting, a few very interesting American connections here at the cemetery. One of them being Thomas Addis Emmett.
Yes.
He was the Surgeon General to the Union Forces in the American Civil War. He was brought back to Ireland in 1919 and is buried at the front of the cemetery under a most beautiful Celtic cross. I was out for a walk there a few years ago, and I came across a grave at the old entrance to the cemetery down across the square.
Yes.
And it was a Celtic cross to William Dillon Walker. And it caught my eye, and I started to read the inscription on it. And he died at the Battle of Wilderness in the final battle of the American Civil War. It was a papal knight, and I probably must have brought him back from buried my ear. But the years passed, and we started to look at it. Our historian started to look and said, look at this guy here, William Dillon Walker, find out more about him. It turned out that William Dillon Walker was the son of John Walker, who who was the sextant of the cemetery. Oh. And his father put bought a grave, put a headstone up for me. It's the only grave that I know in the cemetery that has a headstone on it and no one buried in it. And he William Walker erected the headstone to his son who died in the Battle of Wilderness. And William Walker was my predecessor here 160 years ago.
Wow, wow. George McCullough, CEO of Glasnevin Trust, thank you for filling us in on what is a very, a very significant story about one of Ireland's most prominent cemeteries. And again, it's a tribute. And we salute the Irish government in actually supporting, the centenary memorial for all of those who lost their lives in
1916 Citizen Chapel will be the only lasting memorial built in Ireland to commemorate the decade of centenaries and the 1916 Easter Rising.
Good job. Friends, my guest, George McCullough. To get more information, let me suggest that you log on to www.glasnevintrust.ie. That's where you get the information.